In Indonesia, thousands of people are still missing 2 weeks after a devastating earthquake and tsunami hit Sulawesi Island. At least 2,000 people died and many more were displaced. And getting water, food, and medical supplies to affected areas is still a big challenge. So what the Indonesian government announced this week may come as a surprise. It said that only Indonesian aid workers can help out in the hardest hit areas. Foreign aid workers have to get approval from the government first and work with local groups. That policy has people like Yeni Suryani worried. She's with the Jakarta office of Catholic Relief Services.
I feel like my hands are tied. I tied up because agency like CRS, we have limited number of staff because, you know, sometimes the program in the country is quite big, sometimes, you know, quite small. So the support from international staff really accelerate, speed up our capacity to respond.
We're going to take a step back now and check in with Jonathan Katz. He was an AP reporter in 2010 when a huge earthquake hit Haiti. He later wrote a book subtitled How the World Came to Save Haiti and Left Behind a Disaster. We wanted to get his take on the response to the current crisis in Indonesia. To get us started, Jonathan, why would Indonesia not want the services of foreign aid workers at a time like this? It seems counterintuitive.
Yeah, I mean, if you follow foreign aid a lot, it actually makes a lot more sense. There has been a lot of talk about the need to have countries lead their own recovery and try to cut down on basically foreigners coming in and invading and taking over everything themselves. The Indonesian government is kind of doing what people have been hoping that national governments would do. But of course, it sometimes shakes out a little differently on the ground when your group is the one who's being told to stand down.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking to someone from Catholic Relief Services, and her concern and others is that it's great to have a nation do it itself. But particularly in these early days when you're trying to rescue people, you're trying to give immediate support. Aren't you missing an opportunity to have people with the right skills in quickly to help?
Some of these things actually don't work the way that people who are sitting outside of the disaster zone imagine that they might. Search and rescue is actually a really good example. Haiti's, of course, the example I know best because I lived through it. That's a disaster where between 100,000 and 316,000 people were killed. There were something on the order of about 3 million people who were in the disaster zone. And the highest number that I was ever able to find for the number of Haitians who were rescued by those international rescuers was 211. And a lot of the estimates are lower than that. The vast majority of people, thousands and thousands of people, were rescued by their friends, their neighbors, other people who were around. And in Indonesia, which is a country that has stronger institutions than Haiti does, it would make sense that Indonesian rescuers would probably be already there and already better positioned to do some of those rescues. So rescue is actually maybe one of the better examples of a place where foreigners are not as useful as they like to imagine.
In what cases are foreigners more useful?
Honestly, the aid system is a mess, and the disaster response system internationally is kind of a disaster itself. Indonesia is a really interesting example. If you had told me, kind of as like a blind item, that there is a country that is trying to crack down on or regulate foreigners after a recent disaster, and you gave me like two guesses, I think Indonesia probably would have been one of the two. The reason for that is because back in 2004, you remember the tsunami that happened the day after.
I was just about to ask you about that because I wondered if the same policy was in place then.
Yeah, I mean, it was a slightly different setup. But what happened then that was really interesting was Indonesia really tried to take over the response itself. Part of what happened was the initial response was a bit chaotic. And so one of the things that the Indonesian government did at the time was they set up a reconstruction and rehabilitation commission. And it really became a model for much of the rest of the world on how a national government can take over an aid effort, force outside NGOs and aid groups to register with them, and direct resources where they need to be, take money in themselves, and govern how that money goes back out. And it certainly wasn't perfect, but it was a widely praised effort.
It's interesting to hear you because when you're sitting in, you know, here, a place like Boston or New York or anywhere in the U.S., and you're hearing about some massive disaster in some faraway country that you don't know a lot about, but you think might be kind of poor, the emotional response is sort of, well, wait. You know, wait, you're not treating your people well, and that's not right. I mean, how do you counter that feeling that somehow the people are being shortchanged?
I know where people are coming from. I feel the same way. But what I learned when I was living through these disasters, and especially the experience in Haiti, is that, to be perfectly honest, it's not about us. And it's much more important that people who actually live in these places, who are the survivors themselves, whose societies and cultures these are taking the lead in their own rescue and their own recovery. And people are kind of scrambling. And part of the scrambling is trying to sort of figure out who's in charge and who has the power. And that's something that, that people who aren't experienced with disaster might think is kind of crass or beside the point or something that should be dealt with later. But we see in disaster after disaster that you have to deal with it right at the very beginning.
My last question is, you know, you wrote a whole book about the whole Haiti experience and the role of foreign aid. What were your biggest takeaways from that experience? What are the lessons learned, and to what degree are they being applied now?
I think the biggest thing is that I think there was a sense from a lot of people in the world that Haitians were bystanders in their own disaster. And actually being there and seeing the way that people came together and then ultimately took charge of their own rebuilding and their own reconstruction really showed me the way in which that's completely backwards. The best thing that foreigners can do is assist people in their own efforts and then kind of get out of the way. And I think one of the most important things that we can do is respect that and try to help without making our own savior complex the big story.
Jonathan Katz is the author of The Big Truck That Went By, How the World Came to Save Haiti and Left Behind a Disaster. He's currently a fellow at the New America Foundation. Thanks a lot, Jonathan.
Thank you.